A Taste of Ireland
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Good evening, I'm Aidan Finn and you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. And I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Gareth Mullins. Now, Gareth has some very interesting titles. You're the Commissioner General, Gareth, of Eurotalk, but more importantly, you're the Head Executive Chef at the Marker Hotel here in Dublin, which is a top favourite with a lot of people. Gareth, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much for having me. Excited to be here.
Looking at you, right, you're very fresh-faced, okay? Now, you were telling me earlier...
I'm baby-faced. That way
I mean, I know that you're 22 years in the business, yeah. in the cooking business. You started in a kitchen when you were 14.
Yeah, my first job in a professional kitchen was out in UCD in O'Reilly Hall, and I was 14. I was a pot washer, like most of us professional chefs start off at. And I got the bug straight away. I loved it. I was still in school, obviously. I was going over there at weekends, and my brother was the head catering manager for a company called Renane Catering, run by a gentleman called Eddie Renane. And they gave me my first shot at the industry, and my dad worked away at sea. He worked for Irish Ferries in B&I. He was the head purser, so catering is in our blood. My dad served his time in the Intercon in Dublin, and he also worked in that most famous restaurant in Dublin. They say it's the first fine dining restaurant, Jammies. My dad served his time as an apprentice waiter in there. It was like a 4 or 5 year apprenticeship, maybe. So catering is in our blood, our whole family. My mum worked out in the Grand Hotel out in Malahide, and all my brothers worked on the ships at some point in catering. So I'm the only chef out of the family, although they can all cook. And my dad, actually, when he retired, another nice story, he went to Cattle Brewery and he trained to be a professional chef when he retired.
Wow.
Just for his love of food and all things dining, you know.
And Cattle Brewery, of course, you know, it's an institution, isn't it?
I served my time there myself. After I finished that, I worked there on and off up until I was 18, and then I went to work in the Merrion Hotel as a young, green commie chef, I would say. And I went on the day release programme, and I couldn't get on to the daytime, the one for my age. And I got on to, there was an older, a mature student's one, and I ended up getting onto that course. I don't know how, but... And it was amazing because you had people that were like working in the prison sector, you had people that were working in hospitals, you had lads that were working in restaurants and girls that were working in hotels. And I obviously fell into I was working in hotels, but I'd learned my craft perfectly there. You know, it was classic French training. And I stayed in the Merrion till I was 21, I think. And then that was in 2000. And then myself and my now wife, we went out to Australia for the Olympics. The 2000 Olympics were on in Sydney, and we packed our backpacks and we flew to, where did we go? We went to Kuala Lumpur for a few weeks, and then we travelled around Asia a little bit, and then we ended up in Sydney, where I was determined not to get a job straight away, and 3 days later I was working in the Radisson Hotel in Sydney. Those chefs were suckers.
You were snapped up.
Yeah, well, it was busy, yeah. And all of my friends over there were all working in either IT or on building sites, but I stuck to my guns. I really wanted to continue to learn my craft. And I think I'd done that well. And I stayed out in Australia for 6.5 years, maybe. Yeah, about 6.5 years. I come back to Dublin in the end of 06, the start of 07, just as the crash was about to happen. I remember meeting a guy up in Temple Bar who owned a few restaurants. And he asked me, he had a look at my CV, and I was actually, I was the executive chef in the W in Sydney, which was a beautiful hotel, a Starwood property.
Beautiful chain, yeah.
Yeah, lovely hotel. I was 26 maybe when I was the head chef there. So I was thinking I'd be back to Dublin, I'd be snapped up, there's loads, you know, it's flying. But it was just at the start of the recession. And I met this guy and he said he owned a chain of restaurants. And I actually don't know who he is now, which I'm a little bit, I wish I could remember who it was, but anyway, I don't. And he said, oh yeah, you can run that restaurant for me there in Temple Bar. And I was like, yeah, what's it about? It's 20-seat or 50-seat restaurant, whatever it was. I says, okay, great, yeah. And he says, it'll be €11 an hour. Sorry. So wow. I was like, what am I out of doing coming home, leaving Sydney? I was like, you actually frightened me. But then, you know, I met up with my longtime friend and my boss at the time, which was Ed Cooney, and he's still the executive chef in the Merrion. And I met up with Ed, and he had a space for me, which I thought was only going to be a short term thing. He brought me in as a senior sous chef, maybe, which is like a manager chef, if you like. Mm. And then they promoted me up to the head chef of the Cellar Restaurant and Bar, and I ended up staying for 7 years. Which, Merrion's a beautiful hotel, beautiful, yep. Classical part of, it's certainly a part of my culinary history.
Yeah.
And I think it's now firmly made its mark on Dublin as its culinary history. So, and then I heard that the Marker was going to open down in this new hotel, and I was like, perfect, that sounds like it's right up my street, because it's not a million miles away from that kind of W vibe. Mm. You know, it's cool, it's hip.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I don't think Dublin had anything like that at the time. I think there's a few hotels like that now starting to pop up around the place. But at the time, it was, there was still a lot of traditional five-star hotels. And we really wanted to make our mark, pardon the pun.
yeah.
And that's what we've done, you know. And I think we opened the, I think we opened the Grey Hotel, and I think we've traded very well since we've opened. And it's a leading hotel of the world, same as the Merrion and the Westbury and some other hotels across Ireland. So,
when did you first realise, you know, geez, I love this. I love cooking for people. And
yeah, I love cooking for people, but I also like catering in general. I like the feeling that you get from taking care of people, and I think that, you know, I could have easily found myself working front of house, I think, you know. I love cooking and I love everything about it, but I love hospitality more than anything else. And I think, from someone that's travelled the world with my job, we are really, really good at taking care of people in Ireland, you know. That thing of a land of a thousand smiles and all. And when you're Irish, you kind of, you almost, not frown upon it, but you kind of think it's a bit of a stupid saying, or that's stupid to say that. But when you go to another country where that isn't there, you kind of go, actually, we are very welcoming and we really do like taking care of people. So that, for me, obviously bled into the kitchen, where, you know, I love ingredients and I love everything about the people that make them, and, you know, the time and effort and energy that goes into producing amazing food for not always a big return. You know, and I think that's probably something that we're going to see in the future changing. I think the price of food will go up. Mm. You know, people see the price of a meal and they automatically associate it to the ingredients. But you also need to think about where you are, the people that are serving you, the crockery that you're eating off, and so on and so forth. There's so many different variables into the price of a meal, where a lot of people think, well, sure, in Aldi I can get a steak for a fiver. Why are you charging me €35?
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that we're going to have to accept at some point, that that's an issue with, you know, it's causing challenges for payroll for businesses. Because it's difficult to get people, like professionals, someone that's kind of dedicated their craft to learning how to cook and serve, that we seem to think it's okay not to pay them as much as somebody that maybe works in a bank, or somebody that's an accountant, or, you know, dare I say it, a dentist or somebody.
Mm.
But why not? Like, we've dedicated our whole lives to making our craft front and centre. You know, and I think our industry needs to be, you know, more positive about ourselves and how fulfilling of a job it is, because it is. And, you know, I'll never be out of work because I can travel the world, you know. And that, I mean, COVID has taught me now that that can be stopped, you know. And your line of work, you travel the world.
Yeah.
You know, and travel is so important.
I think, yeah, well, you really realise it. I mean, thank goodness, the last few weeks and the last few months, I'm back, like, with a vengeance. My passport is smoking at home, I'm telling you. But it's just joyful, you know. And just that, you know, I love staycations, and don't we all? But, you know, you can't staycation forever. And, you know, you're in the smells, the tastes, you know, the tapas that you get, you know, the sea, the sun,
wine,
you know what I mean? The price. Yeah, the wine, you know. Yeah, slightly different price as well sometimes.
Yeah, well,
but
exactly.
You know yourself.
Yeah.
But and you know yourself, travel is not just broadens the mind, but it's just so good for us as well as an island. Like, I mean, we're huge into travel.
But if you take that as a concept, I think it does make you appreciate how good we are of taking care of people.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Just to do full circle back to my original point. And, you know, I'm interviewing people constantly in the role of the job that I'm in. And, you know, we're finding it difficult to find people at the moment. And a lot of that is because the travel has stopped. So we have a transient workforce in catering. That's always been the case, and it always will be the case, because chefs and front of house people and housekeepers, all those people like to travel. So they'll move to different parts of the world to learn their craft. But just in turn, those people come here.
Well, I mean, that's the one thing. When I heard there was an internet with ban on travel, like, it's not just about going on holidays. I mean, it fuels the whole economy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd be amazed at it. I mean, I saw guys that were getting boats from the north of Ireland over by Rathlin Island, and they were getting boats over to Scotland because there was no flights, and your man was making great business ferrying, you know, construction workers over and back. But I mean, you know, it fuels so much. So that's a really good point. I was chatting to somebody from Airbnb recently who said Ireland is one of the top super hosts, right? You know, Airbnb have the super host if you're really good at it. So your point is completely true. Even people that rent out rooms here are really good at it. So it's in the blood.
Up and down. Not as someone coming to stay here. And you're like,
yeah,
that's good. I think it's good. And I think, you know, we're a nation of people that like to see people happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe that. You know, when you hear people, oh, but the Irish are begrudgers and all. Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of that in society, but it's in every society. But I know we all love nothing more than if somebody's in your home and you hand them a hot cooked meal and you sit down and you have the crack and, you know, someone sings a song and all the things that happen in our homes that we take for granted. Does not happen in other parts of the world all the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But any part of the world that has any type of food heritage, you'll always see that it's always built around family and taking care of each other. And that's what Ireland is for me, you know. Family is super important to, I know, most of us, you know. And I've, you know, I've 4 brothers and 2 sisters, so there's 7 of us, and we all have kids now, so there's loads of grandkids. And that's been the hardest thing, I think. Without a shadow of a doubt, it's been the hardest thing through lockdown, is not being able to all get together as a family.
Yeah, no, of course.
Independently over the months, we were able to get together. And my dad actually turned 80 during lockdown. So myself and my brothers and sisters, without our partners, our kids, went up to my mum and dad's, and we set out the back garden. And we were like, I think this is the first time that any of us could remember being together without our spouses and our kids.
Yeah.
So that was a nice thing that happened, you know, out of all these negative things. That was something that, I mean, like, we'll do it again. We haven't done it again. All the COVID is there now.
Yeah, no, I know. A lot of people tell COVID was a great excuse not to go home at all, you know.
Yeah, anyway,
can you tell us, what have you chosen for your first piece of music this evening, Gareth?
Well, I decided, you know, I think music is very important, and I have quite an eclectic range of music that I like to listen to. So I went with Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed, just for, you know, some of us chefs like to take an L walk on the wild side every now and then. So that's it.
A Taste of Ireland
on Dublin's Easy Place to Relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. And my special guest this evening, Gareth Mullins, head executive chef at the Marker Hotel, which we were chatting about earlier. Gareth, that was a lovely piece of music. Now, Commissioner General, come here, you look like a Commissioner General sitting there now, right, of Eurotalk. Tell me, a lot of people may not know what this is. This is an amazing organisation that connects chefs and food and suppliers. Could you tell us, like, what does that in your role entail there?
Well, my role as Commissioner General, or the head of Eurotalk, I suppose, is what you are, is that Eurotalk is a chef's-led organisation that really is the key between the kitchen and the suppliers. You know, it's about really protecting craft within our kitchens, making sure that we're sourcing ethically and locally sourced ingredients, and people are getting paid correctly for what we're buying off them. And really just embracing Irish food and heritage as much as possible. It was set up by Myrtle Allen, from the Allens down in Cork originally. She was the original founding member, and since then there's loads of different people have held the role of Commissioner General. I know that Graeme Neville was in recently and done the show.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, from Dax.
Exactly. Graeme was before me. So generally how it works is that when you're Commissioner General, you'll have somebody that, you know, you feel that you want to work alongside with. And Graeme asked me to get involved in it. I was already a member of Eurotalk and an active member. I would have put my young chefs into the Young Chef competition, which we can speak about in a moment. But it's about really just making sure that the organisation is ran correctly, and, you know, that we follow the principles and the members follow the principles. And then also, if somebody wants to become a member, there's a process there in place that, you know, that you follow the principles of being a Eurotalk chef. So Manuela Spinini is she's Secretary General, so she kind of is she's the full-time employee of Eurotalk. So it's her responsibility to make sure she runs the office side of things, so the website is kept up to date, and, you know.
And it's really interesting. I mean, just to give people an idea, like, you represent, there's over 3,500 chefs in 16 European countries, you were saying that. I mean, when you think about that, right, I mean, Ireland consists of what is almost 200 of the, you've 200 roughly here, yeah, is that right, of the country's best known chefs, producers, yeah, etc. So I mean, you joined, I suppose, when there was a lot of change going on and quite challenging, wasn't it, really? And I suppose now with that, I mean, the last year,
I mean, it hasn't been easy, you know. It hasn't been easy because it is it's a paid membership to be involved in Eurotalk, so there was some difficult decisions that needed to be made from a business point of view, I suppose, because the people that you're asking for membership are also, you know, their businesses were closing or they were going into hibernation or all the different things. So there was decisions that had to be made about Eurotalk, but there's a board that sits on that we make the decisions. But the decision was that we would just keep the name of Eurotalk alive. And we,
and I mean, it's, I mean, when you think about, you mentioned there Myrtle Allen, of course we all know great things come out of Cork, right?
Yeah, there you go.
But she, like, I mean, in, you know, an institution, I mean, like, she's like Judith Child, really, in a way, you know, for, to Ireland. But she, the culture, I mean, a big responsibility to protect the cultural heritage and, I suppose, inspiring future generations. And in that whole field, really, the young chef competition is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've missed that as an industry, you know, because it's held every year, and it was always held in, we'd launched a programme around September, maybe, and then there's an online submission generally that the applicant had to, the applicant has to submit an online submission, and then they'll be selected for an interview process where there'll be six or eight chefs, and we'll interview everyone that puts in a submission. And out of that interview process, we whittle it down to, I think it was 12 or maybe 14 young chefs that then go and they compete. So we do a semi-final, generally a mystery basket chosen by the panel of chefs that's involved on the committee for the young chef. And out of that 12 or 14 chefs, we pick six finalists, and then there's a final held where they cook on the day and they're judged, and then that evening there's a gala dinner to celebrate the announcement of who has won the competition. And generally speaking, there'll be, you know, we'll bring one international chef in, maybe, just to kind of, you know, just so it's not all, you know, because we're on the island of Ireland, obviously, we like to bring one international chef in. The last competition that we held, Michelle Rue came over from from London, yeah, which was an amazing, he runs, as you may or may not know, the Rue Scholarship over in London. And he was very complimentary of not only the colour of people cooking, but how the event was ran and how seriously it's taken. And that kind of gets back to, you know, how seriously we take our craft and our profession. And, you know, that's why I was saying about, you know, our pay grade. Sometimes you would have to question at times.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying people aren't well paid in the industry. They are. But, you know, sometimes the balance can be tipped a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But no, it's an amazing competition. But this year we're going to launch it now in October. And that's an exclusive. That hasn't really been out yet, so...
You heard it here first, guys.
You heard it here first, that's it. So,
a taste of Ireland.
Yeah,
breaking news.
Yeah, well, it is kind of, you know. For me, it is.
Anyway,
that's
then, great.
So we launch it in and around October, and then what will happen is the competition final will be up around spring. So I'd imagine it'll be around late March or early April. And what's going to be fantastic from a culinary point of view is that we'll have a different bounty of ingredients, because the last few years, or the few years that I've been involved in, the last 5 or 6 years maybe, we've always done it in autumn. So we were always using things like venison and, you know, game and that type of thing, where when we get into spring, you know, maybe it'll be more vegetable, spring vegetables.
There's a lamb.
Yeah, exactly. Might be a bit early for lamb, but yeah, maybe, possibly, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
No, but it's... yeah, it's cool. It's,
and for the chefs out there, I mean, I know you started 14, right? What age do you have to be to, what is the,
well,
the youngest?
Well, ordinarily the cut-off point is 26.
Ah, okay.
But because we haven't run the competition over the last 18 months, we're going to extend it out to 28, just in case anybody was on the clasp of entering, or so, maybe they were thinking about it. And yeah, we're going to raise it up to 28 years of age, which I think... we'll make sure that nobody misses out, because it really is career changing to win this competition.
Yeah.
And the last person that won it is a girl called Grania Mullins, who set up a company called Graw Chocolates, which is over on the other side of Ireland. She's over in the she lives over in Galway. And she was
looking, I've heard of them. Yeah, of course, Graw, the Irish word for love.
Exactly.
Who doesn't love chocolate?
Exactly. And Grania has set this business up, and she could not speak highly enough about entering this competition. you know, it's really, really inspiring to see young people care about their jobs that much, I think.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I mean, a lot of people wouldn't... I mean, this organisation really, I mean, it's quite important to the whole hospitality industry, isn't it? A lot of people wouldn't probably have even heard of Eurotalk, and yet, behind the scenes, it does incredible stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is important, you know, because it's a voice for, you know, producers to come and talk to us about challenges they're having with different type of things that are going on within the industry. And I get it. I couldn't tell you what's going on in an accountant's world or, you know, a bricklayer's world. But I'm sure there is things that are very important about their trades. But, you know, what's really important about Eurotalk is that it's a line of an open, transparent, honest line of communication between us as chefs and also to producers and even the people that, you know, bring the produce to you. So, you know, we'd be in touch with all the big suppliers as well. So it is very, very important. And obviously it is a European-led organisation. So it, you know, it taps into that side of, you know, what's going on a European level as well. So
brilliant. And, I mean, is it difficult to marry that? I mean, the role that you have there with, I mean, obviously there must be a huge amount of work involved in running, I mean, you know, being head exec chef in the Marker Hotel, as you said earlier, one of the leading hotels. And it's full on, I'd say, is it? And if a family as well, and you're on the radio, and you do a bit of television, right? So just to keep you busy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I often think about that, and, you know, my wife and I often say to me, like, where are you finding the time to do all this? But it's what I do, it's a passion I have, you know? And if I think about COVID and the effect of COVID and the early on effects of COVID and how difficult it was from going, working the hours that I was working to not working, you know, it was a tough time now that I think about. But, and I said, oh, I'm not going to do what I was doing. I'm going to slow down a little bit. But sure, look, we're back open and up and running now. And I'm back working as hard as I ever did and loving it as much as I ever had. And, you know, I think what's important to me is being involved in organisations that really care about the future of our food business.
Yeah, yeah.
And the young people that work in it.
Yeah, another thing that you do as well, which is, you were saying to me, which is back, which is great, is the food awards, right?
Yeah.
Now, they are, I mean, no, a lot of people think, oh, awards, you know, but they are actually really good in terms of, you know, showcasing and what they actually bring. So that's very exciting. That's back as well.
That's back. And, you know, that's those food awards are given out and they're chosen by the chefs within the organisation. So, look, if you, in my view, if you win one of the food awards from Eurotalk, whatever you're producing is the best in the country because it's been awarded to you by the fellas that cook it for a living and the girls that cook it for a living. So, you know, it really, really is the very best of the best. So, you know, this year it'll be a celebration of Little and Local. That's kind of what we're doing this year rather than awarding anybody specifically. I just think anybody that's kept our business, and especially a food producing business, alive and come out the other side of COVID needs to be celebrated. And I would ask our listeners here to really, really think about that time when they're in the supermarket and they're reaching for that, you know, kind of mass produced product that maybe you might be sitting beside an Irish product that might be a little bit more expensive, but I guarantee you when you put it on the plate and feed it to your family, you'll see a bigger smile. You know, and I think that's important.
And do you think, I know this is an awful question to ask you, right, but do you think chefs are made, are they born, or can you make them, or is there a bit of both? You think?
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of both. I do think it's important to have passion for what you do. Mm. And whether that's, you know, presenting travel shows or cooking for a living or hairdressing or clothes making or whatever it is, you know, make sure you enjoy doing it, because what's the point otherwise? You know, and You've alluded to it already, but I've two young kids at home, you know, a 14-year-old and an 11-year-old. And I keep telling them, do what makes you happy. That's what's important. And I've made a career of doing what I've... And I continue to do that. And I think if you're in a job that's making you miserable, you need to think about that, like.
Yeah.
And I have people that have sat in front of me in my job that, you know, that are a little bit older, let's say, and they're in a profession and they ask to come and work with me and... not just me, the hotel that I'm working in, and I'd be like, yeah, do a career change. There will be some short term pain, which is generally financial, that you might have to come back and go on to a lower pay grade. But generally speaking, when you get somebody that's a little bit older, they move much quicker through the industry, you know, and especially if somebody that has a little bit of a different type of background, especially like a business background or anything, normally do very, very well in our industry. You know, when you're 17, 18, 19, 20, don't get me wrong, it's a brilliant time to get in our industry, but you're still partying and, you know, learning all of that other stuff that you learn at that time. But when so I would say that if you're in a job that you don't like and you think you might have had an idea to be a chef or a baker or make cheese, or give it a go, Give it a go. It's important.
Yeah, I think I've watched MasterChef over the years.
Yeah, it's a great example.
You see these bank execs, and next they end up running a restaurant, and they're so happy, of course, you know, stockbrokers, like, stressed out of their brains.
Yeah. Now, the key is, are you willing to do it day in and day out?
Yeah, you know. Like, it's full on.
Yeah, it is full on, but look, super enjoyable. And what makes it really enjoyable is the people. Without a shadow of a doubt, what makes our industry so wonderful.
We're going to chat after your next choice of music about some dishes that made you very famous, right? I'm talking about cronuts and things like that, right?
Fluke.
Which were really great fun. And I think they're really, really great. People would love to hear about them. What have you chosen tonight, Garrett, for your second piece of music?
Snow Patrol, Chasing Cars. So we went with an Irish piece of music this time.
A Taste of Ireland.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine, 106.8. Sunshine, 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. That was a lovely piece of music there by Snow Patrol. Gareth, you've been very synonymous with some really interesting creations over the years, right? And there was a great article I read there about dishes that made your career, and salt and pepper squid in Australia, bubble claws at the Marker. What exactly, for people, where did you get the ideas for these? And the cronut, let's start with that one.
At the time, there was a bakery in New York that had queues around the corner doing it, and nobody was doing it here in Ireland at the time. So my pastry chef at the time, Ray, I said to him, you know, we were making croissants for breakfast, and I was like, why don't we try this cronut thing? And then we'll put it at the launch party and let people know it's down here, and we'll show it to them. So literally, that's what we done, and we served it at the launch party when the hotel opened, and all the journalists were asking me about it and all, and I was like, I didn't think people would be that interested in it. But then we started selling them in the hotel, and literally there was a queue out the door of the hotel.
Yeah, I remember. It was amazing. I mean, it was like people went bananas for them, didn't they?
They were. And look, it was a little bit of fun. They were delicious. And I think that's the thing that we need to remember here. It wasn't something that was just a fad.
There was peach and strawberry and everything.
Yeah, we used to do all different flavoured ones. And there was all the local offices were buying them off us for when they were celebrating anything. And it was brilliant. And every newspaper and magazine and everywhere I went, people were asking me down to the radio to talk about it. And it was a bit of a fluke. It wasn't something that I was, I'm not this marketing genius, but it turned out to be a brilliant stroke of luck. And it got the name and my name out there really well. And we kept doing them in the hotel for years and years to come. And so it was nice. It was a bit of fun. And people loved them and they were delicious. So that's what I think is most important about them.
I often think, especially I was travelling there recently in Portugal, and I was in Spain, and of course, you know, in Barcelona, the beautiful markets that they have there. I often wonder here, markets are huge in Europe. We don't really, aside from these kind of, you know, farmers markets and things, like, we don't seem to do the markets, Gareth, here the way they do in other countries.
I think we're missing a beat there. Yeah. And, I think Cork have an amazing one. The English market down there is incredible.
My grandfather was actually, they were butchers, they were in the market for 2 or 3 years. I used to deliver meat nipper to all the posh women up in Black Rock. But imagine at 14, I was doing abattoirs at 14. But the English market would be a real example of something.
We need something like that in Dublin. You know, we need something that's going to, you know, really bring the city centre together, where you can buy fresh fish, fresh meat, vegetables, and all the other dry goods that we make and produce here. Like, we make some of the best cheese in the world in Ireland, and that's not me just saying that, that's a fact. You know, our cheese win all sorts of awards when they're put into the competitions, because our dairy farming is some of the best in the world, and our procedures around their dairy farming is so good. You know, people look into Ireland to see how to farm. Because we're so good at it, you know. So, and I would love to see somewhere in Dublin that, you know, there is some couple of the supermarkets that do an excellent job on it. But I would love a food focused market in Dublin. So if anyone's out there wants to give me a few bucks,
absolutely. I'm telling you, there's lots of space. There's lots of space at the moment.
Exactly.
I'd be mad keen for that.
Yeah.
Now, another lovely dish that people would love to hear about, the beef and Bordeaux at the market. Now, again, that doesn't sound too fancy, but again, very, very, very nice combination.
Yeah, so we use it. I buy my beef from a company called John Stone, which are based down in Longford. And the reason why I use John Stone is that they pick all their beef and they scan the beef for the marbling content within the animal, which there was a trend for a long time about picking cattle through breed. So you would have heard of Hereford or Charley or Limousine, these different types of breeds, that Hereford beef was the best. Where actually what we're really trying to find is the marbling content within the meat. So the reason why I choose Johnstone is because of that. And then they dry age all their meat for 28 days on the bone, which is also a very important process for flavour profiling. So I take the Chateaubriand, which is the top of the head of the fillet, and we serve it with a beautiful Bordeaux wine. And that's beef in Bordeaux. So that'll just, it's back on the menu at the moment. But we're just about to reopen the brasserie in the hotel. So that's reopening now at the end of September. So we will have beef in Bordeaux back on the menu along with our a la carte menu. And also all this fantastic news about the theatre reopening again. So
yeah,
the Lion King has just been announced. And
yeah, they're advertising. I heard them. Yeah, brilliant.
Incredible, absolutely. Like, the Lion King, I think, starts on the 23rd of December and it runs up until the first week of February, which is absolutely the best news we could have got as a for around Grand Canal, because think about your Christmas presents now. Anybody would be delighted to get an old Lion King ticket.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's brilliant. And we'll do a pre-theatre offering, obviously, around that when the show starts.
And it's constantly challenging for you, I suppose, to come up with exciting. I mean, I know there was another great one you had there, Equilibrium at the Market, which sounds like you're on this nice little weighing scales here.
Yeah,
but
well, I suppose that was born through a guest from New York stopped me in the lobby and he asked me, he says, you know, you have a fantastic menu in the bar and in the restaurant, but your room service menu, he says, there's nothing on there for somebody that's kind of trying to watch what they eat. And I had written the room service menu with the mind of comfort, because an awful lot of corporate guests, and I'd be like, oh, they're away from home, they're on their own, so of course they want to eat a burger or fish and chips or a club sandwich, and they do. But he also said to me, well, what about a guest that, you know, might be training for a triathlon, or they might be running, or they might have a very important dinner that they're going to go to that night where they know they're going to be eating a little bit heavier. So we created a concept called Marker Equilibrium. So it's all about me. That's the idea around it. And it's dishes on the menu that are calorie conscious, I suppose, but still packed with flavour. And also there's an option on the room service menu where you can talk with me and we can design a menu together.
Yeah.
So there's, when the Ironman competition was on a couple of years ago, we had a lot of triathletes staying with us, and I'd often meet with the guests and I'd talk about their diet for the 3 or 4 days that they'd be in. You know, I like training myself, so it's something that I'm interested in. So, you know, it's very, very important that we're fueling our bodies correctly depending on what you're doing. So it's something that I'm interested in myself. So, and guests love it. It's another added thing that you can add to a guest stay, which I think is crucially important when it comes to hospitality. So,
what is particularly difficult about hospitality these days? Now, aside from, I've had very interesting comments from guests about vegans and vegetarians, and yeah, I know gluten-free and seed, and I respect all of that, of course, yeah, but
you're trying to drag me down a garden path.
I'm not bringing you down that dark rabbit hole at all, but I suppose, and then with COVID, people, I think, were so happy to get a table anywhere, yeah, that there was a lot of people said they didn't hear any mention about allergies at all. They were just, you know, so it's funny, isn't it? But what your petty, I mean, when you go out yourself now, right, or you go out for a nice meal, I mean, is there anything that drives you mad, or is there anything you think, God, you know, what are they doing here? Or is it, or do you just switch off completely when you go out?
No, I'm good at switching off, I have to say. I am good at switching off when I go. But I think it's really about, you know, the menu that you're putting in front of a guest, just deliver that. I kind of find it a little bit irritating.
Expectation.
If you go somewhere and, oh, we haven't got that, and we haven't got this, and we haven't got that. I've run out of things loads of times on my menus, but that's where it comes down to guest communication and letting them know, haven't got that, and that's the alternative. You know, I think that's important. But also, you know, not trying to put too many people in a space where it's becoming uncomfortable for a guest, or, you know, that kind of, I'm never a fan of that, you know. I always think you need to be really thinking about the guest experience and what's happening when they're there. But I'm always happy, and it's a common misconception around, oh, chefs must be difficult to cook for and invite to your home. No way.
Yeah.
Chefs love going out and being fed, especially when it's not them having to do the feeding. So anyone out there with chefs as friends, invite them over for dinner. Show them your
culinary. Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. Just make sure you have a nice glass of wine for them and they'll be grateful.
Yeah, brilliant. I love it. Going forward, I mean, it's been lovely to chat to you this evening, Gareth. Just before we finish up, going forward, I suppose, a lot of positivity out there now. Also, we've heard a lot of negativity about staffing problems and things. But, and you were saying the travel thing is definitely going to help that, and in terms of construction as well.
Yeah.
going forward now, how are you feeling about the future?
I mean, I've no doubt that the business, the hospitality business is in crisis when it comes to finding staff. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But what I'm saying is that, you know, come into our industry. It's a fantastic industry that does allow you to travel the world. And, you know, get into the right kitchen or the right establishment and, you love going into work every day. You know, this whole thing of going in and working these horribly long hours all the time and being treated really poorly, I don't see that. Now, I can only talk for myself. I'm not going to sit here and talk about other people. But, you know, we're coming in, we're buying the best ingredients that we can, and we're treating them with the most amount of care that we can, and we're delivering them with the best guest experience that we can. So, and that in itself is extremely gratifying and satisfying. So I know that once the travel opens back up and we get the people in from the other countries that will be looking for work and want to learn their craft and learn it off, hopefully people like me, that we'll get our workforce back again and we'll continue to rebuild.
Yeah.
You know, and even say it, rebrand, you know, like let's get back out there and tell people how positive of an industry. And you've experienced it not only in the hotel where I work, but all across the country on the staycations. And everybody that I'm talking to is like, oh my God, never thought I'd have such a good holiday staying in Ireland, and from the top to the bottom of the country. So we just need to keep behind our, you know, our industry now and continue to support local and artisanal. That's very, very important. They've had a rough now spin. So when we see these products in the supermarkets, and make sure we're buying Irish. Really, really important. You know, let's keep dinner on these people's tables. Really
wonderful.
Important.
Gareth, it's been a pleasure to have you this evening. Now, what have you chosen for your final piece of music for us?
So, final piece of music is Oasis, a band that I grew up listening to. And there's all this talk that may be coming back, and I'd love to see them come back, I have to say. So, it's Half the World Away, cracking chill.
Brilliant. Gareth, I'm going to be in for the Cronuts next week, right?
Lovely.
Thanks a million.
Turn the fryer on.